Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addis, sitting in for Melody Cederstrom, who is on a vacation. This is Financial Survival, Frank Stephan will be joining me as co-host in a couple of minutes. First, let's do the market report. Gold is down $9.30 today to $1,304.60 per ounce. Silver is down 34 cents. To $19.61 per ounce. Platinum is down $10 to $1,459. And palladium is up $12 to $897 per ounce. Over in the equities market, Dow Jones is down 44 points to 16,670. NASDAQ is up 10 to 4,463. New York Stock Exchange is down 12 points to 10,791. U.S. dollar index is down 0.15 to 81.43. And crude oil is up $1.45 to $97.03 per barrel. Hello, Frank. Are you there?
I am.
This is Frank Stephan. He is our co-host. He's producer of the program. He's co-host. I've had Frank on the program a couple of times in the past. And we keep Frank behind a glass. We've got him in a kind of up there on the wall, got a little glass. In case of emergency, break glass, get Frank out here, get him to co-host. And so Frank
like
will
a,
be...
I thought it was like a curtain. Just keep that little dog away from me.
Yeah, well, it's... You don't worry about the little dog. It's the winged monkeys.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hell, boy.
Yeah.
Don't imagine them.
All right. What did you want to talk about today, Frank? You pulled a couple articles out that you might be interested in. Maybe you got something else you want to talk about?
Well, I find it interesting about, you know, because Walmart is considered, you know, probably the biggest, richest retail chain in the world. And, you know, and being such, you know, they've got to be an indicator of some sort. You would think, economically, and from this article that I pulled up, it says that sales stagnation reignites concern about the economy. I mean, we are getting so much. I'll read one article saying, oh, the economy's in an upturn, and then I'll read another one saying, well, you know, less jobs were created and more people lost their jobs, but it's still in an upturn, and then... Well, Walmart sales stagnation, you know, so we're getting kind of mixed, you know, information here, but I try to look at stuff that means something to the most people, okay? All right, the stock market up and down, I'm sure that affects the people in the stock market quite a bit, but it really doesn't do much for me day to day, but I think Walmart might be even a bigger indicator to the average person out there that, hey, there's something really wrong in our economy.
You know, we did a, Jeff referred to this a couple of times on the program in the last week or so, a study by the Federal Reserve that indicates that the average American, if he's faced with an emergency that causes them to come up with an extra $400, for example, something happens to the transmission to your car, or a couple of tires blow out, or who knows, but a $400 emergency is more than 52% of the American people can handle without either selling some of their personal property or they have to go, they have to get a loan from a friend, from the bank, from whatever, to deal with $400. Mm-hmm. That means if the survey's results are accurate, 52% of the American people don't have $400 savings.
Well, and, you know, if these people don't have 400, and that's 52%, and I've seen other people quote 70% on that same study, so I don't really know which is right, but either way, you know, it's over 50%. That's over half. Now, in this Walmart article, they say Walmart's customer base is largely comprised of families with incomes of $40,000 or less. So if 52% of the population can't come up with $400, and Walmart is reeling and having stagnant sales, and their base makes $40,000 or less, and I don't consider $40,000 poor. I mean, if I made $40,000, I'd be like, I feel like a million.
We're in the money.
Oh, boy.
We're in the money.
Yeah, you know, so, and they go on to say there's distress in that segment of the economy. Now, I don't have any numbers on this, but out of the workforce, what do you think the percentage is of people who make $40,000 or less? I guess it's high, but I don't know.
I don't really know, especially in this economy. With people taking part-time jobs, $40,000 or less, I'll bet it's a big chunk of the economy. And it could be that it may be that it corresponds pretty closely. It may even exceed that 52% limit that we're just talking about.
Yeah, I think it might.
But the scary thing about this, to me, it's consistent if they're saying the average American doesn't have $400 extra dollars in his pocket. That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's consistent with low sales at Walmart. They can't afford to buy anything. They're scared. They say, oh, my God, I've only got $400 left in savings. You know, I can't afford to go out there and buy something stupid that I don't absolutely need. If there is an emergency, what will we do? And to me, this is frightening information. It's the sort of thing where you say half the country doesn't have enough money to live for a week.
Well,
that's what we're basically coming down to.
And it really,
half the country can't live. They're hand to mouth. They really are hand to mouth. If there's a problem, it's going to be if there's a real economic dislocation, half the country is going to be going hungry within a week.
Well, and with these numbers and this information, you really have to sit and question all this talk about economic recovery. What kind of an economic recovery is that when 52% of the people don't have an extra $400?
You know, I'm thinking back to when I was a kid in the 50s and 60s and so on. And everybody had $400. It was hard to imagine poor people had $400. And that was back when $400 was worth a whole lot more than $400 is today.
Yeah.
It wasn't a problem. Wasn't surprising. You had money. You know, as a kid, I had money. And it wasn't because somebody gave it to me. It was because I worked and I saved and one thing and another. I wasn't rich by any stretch of the imagination, but I had money and I expected more. It's not there right now. So, again, this Walmart statistic is consistent with the idea that half or more of the country is in a lot of financial. They're under a lot of financial strain. And if things really go badly, there's going to be just trouble, trouble, trouble. Well, what are these people going
to
do?
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, how badly does it have to go to be really bad? I don't think very bad at all. I mean, if bad is...
Yeah, that's the thing.
It costs $400.
Yeah.
things don't have to go all that bad to make it a huge problem.
You know, you can even have a peculiar winter.
Yeah.
Which has been known to happen. Yeah. And all of a sudden, oh my gosh, the whole quarter goes down. Takes a nosedive. Mm-hmm. This is just the sort of thing you look at it and you say, my God, what have they done to this country? And this goes to, one, lowering tariffs and shipping industries and jobs overseas, and two, encouraging illegal aliens to invade this country.
Well, that's, you know, that's on that end, and the people have to take a certain amount of responsibility also, because these people that don't, I mean, imagine, okay, if you have 1 ounce, 1 ounce, a 1 ounce coin of gold in your closet or under your house or in, buried in your yard or wherever, you are better off than 52% of the people in this country.
Yeah. Now, these 52%, now, they may actually have, they have other assets in terms of they've got a car and they've got a house and the rest of it, or many of them do. They're not, it's not like they're impoverished, but in terms of cash that's available for an emergency, they have cash savings of $400 or less. 1 ounce of gold, and you're doing as well as three people in that, in that bottom 52%.
Well, yeah, and not that many people, you know, as far as the big picture of the whole country in America. You know, there's other countries that people are far more aware and realize that they should have some gold, even if it's just jewelry. They got to have something, like India. You know, I mean, the people in India, they collect gold jewelry, even. Just, they know, hey, this is my savings account in case, you know, something goes wrong and I need $400.
Mm-hmm.
Not here, though.
And they don't put it in banks and the rest of it. They just wear it, they get their wives to wear it and jewelry around their necks and arms and whatever.
But not here. So you have to wonder what's gone wrong with people's, what's gone wrong with the education here? Why don't people realize this?
Why don't they?
Well, I think it's a concerted effort by the people that control basically the media, because, you know, the mainstream media, if they got on there and every news outlet on television started telling people, boy, you better get gold, gold is really good, silver's really good, you really ought to do this, there would be a boom in people buying gold. If people were taught in public school that, listen, you know, fiat currency's just fun and games and all nice and good until something goes wrong. You know, that old saying, it's all fun until somebody loses an eye. Well, you're going to need to have something of substance. You know, maybe not your whole wealth, but something. I mean, when we're in a nation where $400 is the difference between, you know, maybe you living under the bridge or you continuing on with your life,
You're in great jeopardy.
Well, it's like
we all are.
Titanic.
We all are.
We don't need any lifeboats.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We've already got, that's it. Well, we got a few, you know. We got a few life preservers and a couple of boats, but we won't need them because the ship is unsinkable. And the truth of the matter is, it's not.
No, we got a big gaping hole in the side. Yeah. And, you know, we're listing pretty bad, but, well, you know, that's the earth shifting. That's not us.
You know, I was looking at some news on Japan. And they have been fencing with China over the Senkaku Islands that are south of Japan. And then this last week, they've started to fence with Russia over the Kuril Islands, which are north of Japan. And these islands are spread out in a 2,000-mile arc from the south end to the north end. And that's interesting. That's the distance essentially from San Diego to Jacksonville, Florida. Right? Mm-hmm. Japan has that much of a perimeter to protect, and yet Japan itself is about 90% the size of California. So they've got a big perimeter relative to their size. And they've got China coming at them at one end and Russia coming at them at the other end. And we can wonder how much trouble they're going to be in before this is all over. And they've had problems that have gone on for 20 years now. They've been in a state of stagnation, stagflation, whatever. They can't seem to overcome their recession slash depression in there. But what crosses my mind is that Japan's problems may not be isolated or unique. I look at Japan, and it shares a common denominator with other Western democracies. They all rely on currencies that are fiat and debt-based.
Mm-hmm.
Does Japan's continuing decline, their demographics are bad, for example. This last year, they sold more adult diapers than they did children's diapers, which indicates they're, and everyone knows they've got a low birth rate.
Mm-hmm.
They're not replacing the society. They're not replacing the population. The society is aging. They're selling more adult diapers than they do baby diapers. They've got a problem with the economy, and now they've decided to sanction Russia, and Russia's come back and said, all right, we'll give you a little run for your money on the Kuril Islands. Let's see how you like that. You want to sanction us? So I'm wondering, are their problems, they strike you as unique, or to what extent do you think they might be a signal for all Western democracies, the United States, European Union, Australia, etc., whose economies rely on fiat, debt-based monetary systems?
Well, I don't know. I think it is more of a Chinese exertion of their newfound power, and they understand the economic system now of the West that they've been in a while, and they've had some success at it. You know, in this one article here, points out, and pretty much everybody knows this already, that China is the top foreign buyer of U.S. Treasury debt. And when you have that, and you own that much debt, you've got leverage. And China has traditionally, you know, a lot of people think, well, China's going to invade the United States. I don't believe that, because China's...
Why bother? We're giving the country away. Why bother to invade?
Plus, China's...
I mean, the Mexicans are invading, the Chinese, why bother? Hmm?
China's history is more regional. They do want to control their region, and this is their region. And I think they feel they have some legitimate claim to those islands. And they've always butted heads with Japan anyway. And, you know, so I think they're using this situation of holding so much U.S. debt, saying, well, okay, Japan is your protectorate, right? Well, really? We want these islands, and we're going to take them. What are you going to do about it? Because if you move against us, which, you know, militarily, the U.S. Navy probably could push China back with, you know, a few casualties. But the thing is, our economy could not. If we did something like that, and China responded not militarily, but economically, they could take it crashing down. Now, they would be hurt by that, too. But China has this thing about, you know, well, we go, well, what are they going to do with all those people, you know, that we're working? And if, you know, if they blow down the economy of the United States, then we won't be buying anything from them. And what are they going to do with all their factory workers? Well, China has solutions for that, and that's just kill them all. And they have a history of that. And I don't think they would hesitate to do it. You know, so I think this has a lot to do with China's political and geographic, you know, what they think is they're entitled to in their region. And I think they are using the fiat currency system and the large debt that they hold of the United States as a weapon, as leverage, whatever way you want to look at it. I think they're
Let's talk more about that. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll talk more about the Chinese leverage when we return. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Frank Stephan on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663, or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Frank Stefan. He's co-host today. Program's brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. And today's special, almost uncirculated $5 Liberty, free 1 ounce Silver Eagle. Price includes shipping, $435. A $5 Liberty is quarter of an ounce of gold, of course, 1 ounce of Silver Eagle, and $435. $5 Liberty coins in almost uncirculated condition are an excellent substitute for gold bullion. Minted more than a century ago, they're limited supply today and contain nearly a quarter ounce of pure gold. It costs a little more than bullion coins, I get that, but not much. And it has the potential, when collectibles start to increase in price again, it has the potential of increasing more rapidly and to a greater degree than the conventional gold. So in any case, almost uncirculated, $5 Liberty, free 1 ounce Silver Eagle, includes shipping, $435. Give Discount Gold and Silver a call, 1-800-375-4188. When we broke for the commercials, Frank and I were talking about Chinese leverage and based on the debt, how much the American debt they held, which is allegedly about 20%, if I understand correctly. They hold about 20% of the alleged of the foreign holdings in debt right now. About 20% goes to China, if I understand correctly. What I'm curious about is this. We've had 2 years now when the price of gold has been irrationally low. And although most of the prices are based on paper gold rather than physical gold, still, transactions are taking place where physical gold is moving. People are selling it for what strike me as reduced and suppressed prices. People are buying it at almost giveaway prices, in my opinion. And China has been one of the principal beneficiaries of this gold. It's been moving from the West to the East, from the United States, for example, in Europe, to China and India. So I'm curious, do you think
that the Chinese have used the debt leverage. And they say, look, we're gonna throw all that debt out and we're gonna collapse the dollar unless you agree to hold the price of gold down and sell that gold to us at giveaway prices. Is that just a crazy conspiracy theory, or do you think there might be any validity?
Well, it's a conspiracy theory, but I think it's absolutely feasible. And anybody out there that wants to think about it, just put yourself in the Chinese position. Wouldn't that make sense to do that for you? I mean, if you say, well, you know, I want these islands, so I'm going to take them. And if the U.S. says anything, I'm just going to tell them, oh, yeah, how'd you like it if I, dumped your debt?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I do the same with tangible wealth? You know, because the Chinese, yeah, they're buying things here. They're buying, condominiums and businesses, and they're doing that here. But I think they realize that, you know, you really only own what you can control. And if push comes to shove, they'll have a very difficult time controlling properties within the United States. So I think they would prefer wealth in their hands where they can control it, you know, and gold and silver has historically been that. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. And if I was them, that's what I'd be doing. I mean, wouldn't anybody?
Yeah, it seems almost, the potential is almost too irresistible.
I think the word no-brainer comes to mind.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. You either give us something we want, or we're going to cause you a bunch of trouble because we're holding all your debt, or a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Enough
to leverage.
You're in a country where people can't withstand a $400 thing, they hold enough of it to cause huge problems.
You know, you've heard the rumors that the American treasury of gold has been depleted, and there might be nothing left to speak of at Fort Knox, and West Point has part of the U.S. Treasury, and some of it is allegedly up in the Federal Reserve vaults in New York City. Mm-hmm. And there are rumors and suspicions that the reason the gold hasn't been publicly audited since 1953, if I recall correctly, is that at least lately, there's no gold left or very little. And this explains why Germany said, we want our gold back, a couple hundred tons. And the government responded, well, we'll get it to you in a few years. We can't give it to you right now. Mm-hmm. We allegedly hold 8,200 tons of gold, but maybe we don't. All right. Why do you suppose that, assuming that story, that theory, that conspiracy theory is right, why do you suppose the government has allowed the supply of gold to disappear?
I think really I think it's because there are certain other governments that, say, like China or India, that traditionally, historically understand that tangible wealth is something that, even if you're not using it right now as your currency, it's something that you should have. You know, these are long-standing civilizations, the Chinese and the Indians, and they've seen things come and go before. This is not their first, trip to the amusement park. They've been there, they've seen this, and they realize that, look, eventually, things go bad, and it's good to have, you know, something tangible that you can put your hands on. And I think that the fact that, I think the bankers in the West just really have bought into their own idea that, oh, well, we can just do this monopoly thing we got going on here with this fiat
forever
currency,
and it's never going to break.
Right,
it'll never fail us. All we have to do is just print more money.
Well, we've got a huge military, and if anybody gives us trouble, we'll just bomb them, and we can take care of this. And I think they believe that, and apparently other countries don't believe that. They believe, well, yeah, you might be able to bomb us. You might even be able to crush most of our civilization, but everything comes back around, and eventually we're going to need something tangible. And I think they're short-sighted. the Western bankers. I think they really are short-sighted because they've gone a few hundred years now with this whole fiat, concept. You know, because the concept started when they started taking gold and writing more paper than they had gold for.
Yep.
Okay, that's when it started, and and they've just expanded on that and said, hey, what do we even need gold for? We just write this paper, you know?
Exactly.
And now we're in this situation where, you know...
And they can't dismount.
There's no
there's not an easy way to... There's not an easy way to say, oh, this was a mistake, so we're not going to have fiat currency anymore, and tomorrow we're going to have... We're going back to gold and silver. They can't do that.
No.
It's, all right? There's not a... They have to plunge ahead and go deeper and deeper into debt and deeper again and deeper again. And if we stop going into debt, this whole thing blows up in our faces.
It's like being in a car thinking, you know, I really should get out of this car, but we're going 100 miles an hour and it's going to be tough if I jump out now.
Yeah, I know. I know. This is going to be... I hope you get some... leather pants and jacket and the rest of that, because you're going to skid, boy. You're going to skid for...
This is going to leave a mark.
One of the things I wonder about with the loss or the suspected loss, we don't know that it's gone, but there's a lot of people who are intelligent, knowledgeable, responsible. They think the U.S. Treasury, gold treasury, has been... who knows, 90%, 95% depleted. When I talk about why would they be dumb enough to do that, that's one of the things we can ask. Maybe they weren't so dumb. And the reason I say that is this. There are people, everybody who looks at this understands that the dollar is not going to live forever. One way or another, the dollar is going to collapse, although it's possible that it might collapse. Who knows? It could collapse before the end of this year, although that's not likely. But it seems almost certain that it can't last another 5 years, at least to me.
Well, not
the dollar's end is coming. Now, a lot of people are thinking that if the paper dollar, the fiat dollar, dies, then maybe we can restore it. We will replace it with a... We will return to a gold or silver-based currency, money, in this country. But how can we go back to a gold-based money in this country if our treasury is exhausted?
Right. That's true. And the dollar, I think, will probably have a dollar, because people would go crazy if it didn't and there'd be bigger trouble. But in its current form, I don't think so. Now, years ago, there was a theory being floated based on what some other countries had done already, and that was to have, like, let's just use the word dollar, and you have a dollar, you have a domestic dollar, and you have an international dollar, and they're not based on the same things, and they do not have the same value, and you can't buy it, you can't trade with other nations with the domestic dollar, because they won't take it, because they recognize it's not worth anything. But among your own people in your own country, this is what they use. And then the, you know, companies and governments use these international dollars to trade internationally, because they're going to have to be backed by something.
Can you name any of the countries that have done that?
I think Cuba had that going on for a while. They had a dual currency.
So did we.
Oh. Okay.
So did we. We went off the gold standard domestically back in 1933, but we continued to treat the dollar as if it were redeemable in gold until 1971 if the dollar was held overseas.
Mm-hmm.
We had that two-part currency in this country, and finally we had to shut the door and said, no, close the gold window. Nixon closed it in 1971, but they did something very brilliant, audacious. They set things up where the dollar became the petrodollar. The fiat dollar was implicitly backed by crude oil, because they cut deals with Saudi Arabia and with OPEC, and they said, we will protect you, or I don't know what the deals were altogether. But those countries, Saudi Arabia and OPEC, guaranteed to sell their crude oil only for dollars.
Right.
And so the world had to have dollars if they needed crude oil, and they certainly did, and therefore the dollar was implicitly backed by crude oil. So that was brilliant, but it only lasted It started out around 1971, 72, 73 with a petrodollar. It lasted until Saddam Hussein started selling Iraqi crude oil for currencies other than the dollar back around 2000.
Well,
and then we invaded and hanged him and tried to give him all a dose of shock and awe and impress everyone, you better not sell any of that crude oil for anything other than dollars, because that was what's holding it. And in the end, the world is now free to sell their crude oil for things, for currencies other than fiat dollars, which means petrodollars going bye-bye.
Well, what's interesting about that Saddam Hussein and selling his oil, you know, he basically got spanked for that, but it wasn't, he didn't do that.
It's more than a spanking when they hang you.
That's true.
And it's one thing, there's a difference between being spanked and hanged.
But he didn't do this by himself, because his country was under a program of the UN, Oil for Food. The United Nations was the one that gave him the permission to accept other than dollars for his oil. So his partner in that was the United Nations. And people skip past that and don't realize, you know, that the United Nations is no friend of the United States. And while, yeah, Saddam Hussein paid the price for that, the United Nations was he would not have been able to do that if not for the United Nations permission, because they were administering the program Oil for Food. So I think it's, you know, Saddam Hussein's gone, Iraq is occupied, but the UN still infests New York City.
Yeah.
And I think it's important people revitalize, and I've noticed that over the years. You know, back 20 years ago, we had protests against the UN on every UN day. We were out burning flags on the courthouse steps, and the media was there, and hundreds of people would show up. And now, nobody mentions the UN much at all, but they're still there, and they're still working the way they always have been working.
Do you think our failure to pay much attention to the UN right now, is that evidence of our own ignorance and indifference? Or is it evidence that the UN is no longer as significant as it was 20 or 30 years ago?
I think it's been a concerted effort by the media and the government to basically obscure them. I think they're still doing what they've always been doing. I think they have as much influence as they ever had. And I think we're just not being, and yeah, we're ignorant to it for the most part, because it's not being brought to anybody's attention. Nobody is talking about it. The media is not making an issue of all the things the United Nations is doing and what they have done.
I think that's partly because of the end of the Cold War. When the UN was particularly significant is when the world was polarized between the communists, the Union of Soviet Socialistic Republics, and the United States, and there was an apparent threat to go to nuclear war on a regular basis. And once that died, did we still need the UN? Was it still a headline act, or was it relegated to second-class status because there wasn't a real threat of nuclear war?
The way I look at it was the powers that be view the UN as a good thing for the people to know about as long as they were the mediating force in the world. But now I think they have kind of moved more into a cartel status, and they don't necessarily want people to know about that.
I'll tell you what, let's take another break, and when we get back you can explain what you mean by a cartel status. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with my co-host, Frank Stephan. We'll be back in a moment.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Frank Stephan, and programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Don't forget today's special and almost uncirculated $5 Liberty, almost a quarter ounce of gold, plus one free 1 ounce Silver Eagle. Price includes shipping, $435. Such a deal, huh? $5 Liberty coins are almost in almost uncirculated condition, are excellent substitutes for gold bullion. They're minted more than a century ago, they're in limited supply today, and contain nearly a quarter ounce of pure gold. They're a good investment. Over time, they have to appreciate more as collectibles. Even though they're only almost uncirculated, they have to appreciate more than just bullion coins. So give them a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. And Frank was talking about how he thought that the United Nations had become some sort of a cartel, if I understand correctly, when we broke for the commercials. Why don't you explain what you mean by that?
Well, everybody always viewed the United Nations ever since the, you know, League of Nations as a place where nations could get together and basically mediate their problems with each other without going to war. And that, you know, that's always been the, oh, that's why we need the UN, so we don't go to war and we can sit around and talk about it instead. And while that was the perception, you know, the UN was in the news a lot, and some people protested it, and some people loved it, but it was visible. Since then, the UN has become more of a nation of countries that, yeah, they sit around and talk about things, but they talk about, okay, what direction are we going to go? What's going to be our agenda? Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? And these are supposedly opposing countries. And when you take opposing competitors and put them together to work together, that is a cartel. And that's basically what I believe the United Nations is right now, is an international cartel of not only sovereign nations, but also what they call non-governmental organizations.
Which means rich entities that have money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly what it means. Corporations.
Yeah. I think the difference is right now there was a time I can remember back in the 50s, for example. I remember Bob Hope. He was a spokesman for the United Nations, and he spoke out in terms of how the United Nations was working to prevent nuclear war in this country. And that was a great idea, and a lot of people were, and the two sides were fighting in the UN, the communists versus the capitalists, the free world, blah, blah, blah. They had that contest going on in the UN, but at least at the time, at least they had a story where they said, we're here to stop nuclear war. But today, most of what passes for government, not just in the UN but around the world, has become what's in it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And this, is, to me, is consistent with your notion about cartels. How rich can I get off this deal? I don't care if it's right or wrong. Nobody's worried about, at least up until recently, nobody's had a serious concern with World War III. Haven't had one for probably 20 years or more. Talk about it maybe, but nobody's really been rattled about it. But now, maybe that's going to return, hard to say. But in this absence of the threat, what motivates people other than where's mine? You know, how much can I get out of the deal?
Well, and the evidence of what they do and the programs that they promote and run are evidence of exactly that. You know, and you've got to go, I mean, it's not secret information, it's not on the front page of the, you know, the internet, but you can do a search and go look and see what the UN's up to, and every once in a while I do, just to keep up on what they're doing, and it's not, it isn't the, it seems they still couch a lot of their operations as humanitarian peacekeeping things, but the way it works, when you read a little deeper of the details, because once you find out what they're doing, you can go locally and they got news stories about how's this plan the UN website tells you about, how's it actually working on the ground, you know, and you go get a local, you know, news thing from there, wherever it is, and it is usually all about somebody's getting rich.
Yeah.
And, well, let me, a lot of people suffer for it.
I understand that, but are we better off? This is a cynical question, all right? It's a cynical, based on a cynical perception of the world. Are we in more danger when the UN focuses on ideology? Or are we in more danger when they focus on greed? Which one is more likely to get us killed?
Well, probably greed. Because eventually, you know, greedy people cheat each other.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, you know, nothing gets somebody off to a war faster than being cheated in a money deal.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think maybe we have more to fear from the ideology than we do from the greed. From my perspective, I look at it and say, yeah, it's greedy. They are greedy. They are corrupt. All right, they're working with bribes and whatever, trying to see how much money they can make. But in the midst of that greed, they're not real likely to hit the red button. They might hit it by accident, but they're not likely to hit that red button, and we are not likely to be vaporized. On the other hand, when we got into the ideology, and we have Chairman Khrushchev sitting there at the UN pounding his shoe on the table and saying, we will bury you. That's the kind of thing, it seemed to me that he was perhaps pushing us closer to nuclear war than just these greedy people. So I'm wondering, which one is better, which one is worse? Neither of them are good.
Well, and it may not be an either or.
I mean, agree with you.
You know, there could be, I mean, Khrushchev could have been all upset because we were basically locking him out of markets where the Soviet Union could have made a profit and actually fed their people and stuff, and they were using ideology as a means to get the public, because that the public's the one that's going to fight the wars, and you know they're not going to do it because, well, he cheated me out of some money. Well, I'm not going to war because somebody cheated you. you know, but, oh, get me believe in a certain way, and, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah, we got to stand up for what we think is right, then you can get the people going. So it might be...
And without expecting to be paid.
Sure, it could be...
I mean, the only thing you have to do is you just pin a little piece, of ribbon, got some plastic, once in a while even a little metal in the plastic, pin it on their chest as a ribbon, and they think, ta-da, I've been paid.
Yeah, exactly. Huh?
Truth of the matter is, some of this stuff, it's so crazy. It is a way of, if you had to pay people, said, look, Frank, I want you to go over to this jungle, and I want you to crawl around in the underbrush there for a couple of years and see how many people you can shoot and try not to get shot yourself. Now, how much are you going to charge to do that? If this was a free market operation and you had to pay people to get them to go fight a war, how much do you suppose you'd have to pay them per year?
Well, I don't know, but we could go on to the whatever their new name is now, Blackwater's website, and find out what they're paying people, because that's probably about the going rate for that these days.
Right. You're exactly right. But governments don't have to do that because... First, we give them a bunch of patriotism and teach them how to be young heroes, and they all fall for it. Well, not all of them, but a lot. You know, I did when I was a young man. And whatever, you go over and you're ready to extinguish your own life.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I didn't go...
$100 a month or something like that? I don't remember what we were being paid, a couple hundred a month.
Oh, not much, but I didn't go in... for the patriotic reasons, and I don't think many are now these days either, but I will admit this, that once I got in there and started getting the training, or we could call it the brainwashing, after about 4 or 5 weeks, I was marching around just like every other little Nazi, singing songs about killing the Ayatollah and stuff.
I understand.
You know, I mean, and I was totally committed to it. Yeah, we need to go do this. I don't know why, but we got to.
Yeah, we don't need to know why. Everybody says we're going to have to, so we just do.
Yep.
And it's taken for granted. You know, when I was in the Vietnam War, I was in during the Vietnam War. I was never sent over there. And the reason is because after AIT, they lost my records. All right? And I was put in a holding company. And I was there for something like 90 days. I don't remember. It might have been 5 months. I don't even remember anymore. But it was several months in this holding company. And I had to work as the night typist, which means I had to work an average of 20 minutes a day. And I finally got tired of it. I got tired. I couldn't stand prosperity. You understand?
Yeah.
You look back and you think, my God, what a dummy. What a moron I was. But I couldn't deal with it. So I went down to personnel and I said, what's up? And they went into a filing cabinet looking for my records, and I was there where I could see the filing cabinet. It was maybe 10 foot away from the counter where I was standing, and I could see he's looking in the filing cabinet, and my records aren't in there. And then he looks behind the filing cabinet, between the filing cabinet and the wall, and there's my file. They had apparently pulled my file out with everyone else in my company went to Vietnam except for me and 4 or 5 guys that were in the National Guard. They were only in for 6 months, so they weren't going to Vietnam. Everybody else went to Vietnam. I did not go because my records, my file, fell off. They probably pulled a whole stack of them out of the drawer at one time, set it on top. One of them slipped down and back. That was mine, so I didn't go to Vietnam. Nothing but blessing.
Yeah,
I was dumb enough to get myself killed or do things that I would regret the rest of my life. And it was just nothing but extraordinary blessing and grace of God as far as I'm concerned. But thank God. I mean, it's one of those things that never crosses my mind. Thank God, because I know I would have done things that it would have just didn't belong there.
Right. And that don't
And it's
away.
True for everyone, but everyone didn't get the break.
That's true.
I did. So, I got one.
I wanted to ask you about something because, you know, you see the news here about, okay, the Fed says that they're going to stop this, what we've, you know, come to know as quantitative easing, buying bonds and all that. They're going to taper back on that. You know, we've got that. We've got the economy that seems to be going down. We see that $400 a month is going to crush people. I mean, you know, $400 emergency is going to crush people. And I know there's no prediction or all, but I just want the listeners to realize, even though the sun is shining, there are big, bad clouds on the horizon. And I don't think anybody knows exactly when they're going to get here, but you can see they're out there, and they're bad. And you really have a great opportunity at this time, with the prices the way they are for gold and silver, to take advantage of this. And you know, even if you can only get whatever you can get whatever you can get now. Honestly, I can't. Can you see, and try to be creative even, but can you see any way that this economy is going to avoid a huge problem?
No. The only question, it's astonishing to me that they've been able to avoid a collapse. I would have expected a collapse 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And they've managed to give the devil his due. They've held this thing together far longer than I would have thought they could, and it's possible that they will continue to hold it together longer than I think is possible. But I don't believe that's true anymore. I think we're close to the end of the game, in part because we're not only facing problems, economic problems within this country. We are facing economic pressures from outside the country. And where do we turn for relief and sanctuary or whatever? I don't think that's available to us, and I certainly don't think it's available to the government. And therefore, there's going to be a moment of reckoning. And when that reckoning comes, those people that are holding their wealth in the form of paper are going to see their wealth vaporized.
Well, in 29 and the 30s, when they had the worldwide depression, and you know, we did not have an interconnected economy like we do now. This is like the Great Depression squared.
I agree.
You know, we're all connected. Somebody goes down, everybody goes down, and you know
And it's not going to be an easy thing.
No,
this will be worse than the Great Depression. If we got to something that looked like the Great Depression, it would actually get worse than the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm. I think so. And it's the prices. You know, I know people are struggling because the economy's so bad, even at the good prices. But the prices are extraordinarily beneficial to you to buy now, given what is probably And I think it's the near future. But hey, it could be years.
I agree.
Who knows?
I agree.
I don't know.
Oh yeah, we don't have a time frame that we can rely on, and no one else can give you that either. But you can see this is as sure as knowing the sun's coming up in the east. I don't have a watch, but I know it's going to come up in the east here in the next few hours. You know, it might be 12 hours or whatever, but I know it's coming up.
Yeah, it's getting lighter.
You know what's going to happen. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you, Frank, for being on the program.
Thanks
with
for
me.
Having
I want
me.
To thank you, folks. Welcome. My pleasure. Thank you, folks, for listening. We'll be back Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Frank, and Melody. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's you.